Are we the snowflake generation? Is romance dead? Is social media turning our brains to mush? Is chivalry sexist? Welcome to 20s Questions. Join me, Francesca McClement, as I set out to talk to young people from different countries, continents, and backgrounds about what it's like to be a young person in this day and age. This week I'm in Cambridge with an old school friend, Max Turner, who lives here now. Max, you better have some wise words for us, so no pressure.
No, I don't think I do, but I'll try my best.
Why are you on this podcast? You've got to give interesting insights to my listeners.
Well, if you've chosen me, then you obviously think I'm interesting.
Let's talk a bit about your higher education, because you wanted to start out to become an architect.
Mm-hmm.
And you did your undergrad in architecture.
That's correct.
And then...
Yeah, so I did my undergrad in Liverpool. Best 3 years of my life, very fun. Yeah, did architecture. Then I moved to Cambridge for a job on Mill Road, actually, and worked for a year. And then while I was working, I applied for a master's, because architecture, you do 7 years of studying, basically. But it's in three parts. You do undergrad for 3 years, and you do master's for 2 years, and diploma for 2 years, or 1 or 2 years. But you have to do a certain number of years in practice in between. So that's why I had kind of a year experience in practice before I started the master's. So then I applied for the master's in Cambridge, and I got in somehow. And I was actually very excited to start. And I actually really enjoyed being like in college and being in Cambridge, but I really didn't like the course. It was really badly organized. And it's the design side of the course was terrible, really. The design tutors, I don't even know why they were chosen for the course. Some of them didn't even have any experience in architecture, so that made me question why they were teaching me.
At one of the best universities in the UK.
It's weird because the thing that appealed to me about the course was the fact that it was kind of trying to merge academia with design, which is something that there's normally a big divide in, between, well, in all the other universities, most other universities. So that appealed to me. But then the academic side was great. I loved doing the research from my supervisor, but the design side was really lacking, I think, and I was really disappointed. So I withdrew from my studies last year.
Yeah, so you made a pretty bold choice to quit your master's.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I probably would have finished it if it wasn't for COVID, but the fact that the pandemic hit, because all my kind of funding was cancelled for my field work. I was meant to go to Paris. That got cancelled, and then that kind of like tipped me over the edge. I mean, I was having doubts about the course anyway, but then... once the pandemic hit, I decided to call it quits. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people would just stick to their guns if they got into a university like Cambridge. So I feel like your decision to quit is quite a bold move. And I respect you for it, but like, do you want to talk a bit more about why you decided to quit? Because you decided that it was more important to leave than to stay.
Yeah, I didn't think me staying for another year would have been a good use of my time, or my money, to be honest. I thought that I could be doing better things with my life. I really enjoyed being in Cambridge, so I wanted to stay in Cambridge, but I didn't think me spending another year on this course was really going to benefit me in any way.
You thought that leaving would be more of a statement than staying, didn't you?
Yeah, I suppose. I didn't do it for that reason, of course, but I think in some ways, leaving a university like Cambridge is also a statement in itself. I don't really that wasn't my main motive, of course. And I did get a lot of stick from like friends and family and stuff when I mentioned leaving, and of course my family were like, you should stay, what you do, get Cambridge on your CV. But then a lot of people were like, actually, you know what, like if you don't enjoy the course and you're not enjoying your time there, then why should you stay? Do you.
Yeah, and you said that it had a really high dropout rate, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Quite a few people have dropped out.
But do you think that was because it was hard or because people genuinely didn't enjoy it as a course?
Yeah, it actually wasn't hard, that's the thing. I was expecting it to be really intense, but my undergrad was way more intense. I was working hard and it was a lot of pressure to perform, of course, which is, I suppose, one of the things at Cambridge. But I was working quite hard, but not as hard as I did in my undergrad. And I was still, getting good marks, I suppose, and, doing well. I think also that might be part of it, really. it's kind of like everyone's kind of floating around, not knowing what they were doing, and it didn't feel like a master's. It didn't feel like we were getting the intensity and the kind of the education.
And it's so expensive to do a master's at Cambridge, isn't it? It's more than like, because I did normal university. It's about 10 grand, isn't it? And I think here it is maybe like more.
Well,
the
thing is, for I don't know about that, but with architecture, the master's is actually seen as like an extension of the undergrad. So I was still paying. Well, I got a loan for like 9 grand a year.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I don't know if that's the case for other courses, but for architecture, the master's is seen as, I suppose, a part two of the undergrad, which is why, you know, it was 9 grand, but still a lot of money, you know, to pay back.
Definitely. But, I mean, it's paid off. It was a bold decision to leave, but now you're working and you're enjoying it.
Yeah, so I'm now, I mean, when I dropped out, you know, it was kind of the summer of 2020. And there was, no jobs were going in the architecture world really at the time. I mean, I was keen to look for architecture, you know, work in Cambridge, but nothing was happening. No one was hiring. So I wanted to kind of get a job in a similar area to architecture. So I suppose something quite creative and artistic, but not necessarily architecture. And I was lucky enough to find a job in an art gallery, in central Cambridge, which was, founded in 1945. And yeah, it's a very small gallery. Well, it's a large collection with about 9,000 items, and it's all British arts and crafts. But it's a very small team, just two of us really, and the guy who owns it. So I was very lucky to find that job, and I'm really enjoying it. It's, to be honest, it's quite a privileged place to be as well. It's opposite King's College, so it's not a bad view. And I'm surrounded by all this incredible art, and I get to meet all these artists, and it's, you know, and I suppose I'm learning a lot about business, the business side of things. How it's run, because it's such a small practice, I'm kind of involved in every aspect of running the business. So I suppose I'm kind of, you know, really making the most of that opportunity and learning.
Didn't you say that the Archbishop of Canterbury walked in the other day? Oh, sorry, I mean Canterbury.
He's so funny.
I'm so funny.
Yeah, he did. He did. I didn't recognise him, but somebody else who was at the time kind of pointed him out, and I was like, cool.
I have seen him on TV, but I don't know if I'd actually recognise him.
Yeah. Justin Welby.
Yeah, just an old man.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been in robes or anything, I guess.
No, he was just chilling, you know?
I guess if you saw him in trailers, you definitely wouldn't recognise him.
Yeah, yeah. I looked him up afterwards and I was like, oh yeah, cool. That's Justin Welby.
Who's the most famous person that's walked into the gallery?
Well, in my time, of course, it's, you know, we haven't really been open to the public, so I haven't really seen many famous people. I saw Mary Beard walk in once, but apparently before my time, we used to have David Attenborough come in. Stephen Hawking used to come do his Christmas shopping there. Tyson Fury came a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
It's big. Our famous people do turn up. Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, I think Tyson Fury kind of stumbled upon it. He didn't mean to go to the gallery. But David Attenborough and Stephen Hawking definitely knew about it and were kind of targeted the gallery.
I love him.
Me too. Who doesn't? Yeah. He's a national hero.
He's a really attractive.
He's a national hero.
Mate, when he dies, I'm going to fully mourn. Like, I'll dress in black and everything.
I think this is harsh, but I think people will mourn more when he dies than when the Queen dies.
I think they will.
They will.
Yeah. Although it'll cost the country a lot more when the Queen dies.
Yeah, it will. Have you seen that video of the Queen in Attenborough in, I think it's in, Blenheim Palace grounds, or is it in Buckingham Palace grounds? Anyway, they're walking around, and there's a sundial. And it's in the shade, it's like in the shade of a tree. And the Queen just goes, well, that's not very useful, is it? And they're like, ha ha ha. It's very cute.
Oh, adorable. Yeah. Yeah. Yesterday when I went into the gallery, I was quite impressed by like your knowledge of all the artists. You like have a lot of knowledge. So I was thinking, we should do another Snog, Marry, Avoid.
Oh gosh.
But with artists, and you have to like think it through. It's not gonna be about appearances or anything like that, because, I mean, they're dead now.
Yeah,
but
okay.
It's going to be about, like, personality,
okay.
Like, their lives.
Gosh.
And their talent.
I hope I know them enough to...
You will. These are artists that, like, everyone will know, I hope, anyway,
okay.
Because
okay.
They're, like,
oh, wow.
The
okay.
Most famous artists. Okay.
I'm intrigued.
So we've got three artists from very different times, very different styles. So you've got William Turner.
Okay.
I love him. Everyone knows I'm a big
yeah.
Turner fan. Vincent van Gogh.
Okay.
And Andy Warhol. So, who are you going to snog, who are you going to marry, who are you going to avoid?
Whoa, what a selection.
It's a big question.
Oh, gosh.
loaded question.
I mean, I would marry Turner. Easy peasy.
I agree. Me too.
Although, I mean, of course, my surname being Turner, and my dad's from Margate, and Turner's from Margate, so there's a possibility. I mean, I'm just saying this. I'm very hopeful. But
that you could be related.
There's a possibility I'm related to Turner. I don't know. Like,
so that would be incestuous if you married him.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But it's probably not. Like, I'm probably not related to Turner.
That would be really
cool. But my dad's from Margate, you know.
You should do an ancestry test.
I should, but I'm scared to find out that I'm not related to Turner, because then
that would crush me. Yeah, but imagine if you are. That's the biggest flex ever.
Well, then I can't actually marry him. Okay, I can. I'm still marrying Turner, because...
Okay, fine. A little bit of incest never hurt anyone. Look at the royal family.
He's just, you know, he's inspirational, and he was so kind of avant-garde for his time, and...
Did I just say a little bit of incest will never hurt anyone?
I think you did.
What's wrong with me?
I think I kind of blanked it. I don't know, I zoned out, because...
Moving on.
Wow. You might have to edit that out.
I'm keeping it in.
All right.
Our royal family have stayed strong doing that. So
yeah, that's true. Okay.
Right, what are we thinking? Vincent van Gogh and Andy Warhol, we got them left.
Okay, I think Vincent would have been very interesting to meet. So if I get to like Snoggin and have a bit of a chat with him.
Mate, he was wild.
He was wild, yeah. No, I think it'd be fascinating to meet and talk to.
Don't hang out with him when he was like cutting his ear off, though.
Yeah, he went a bit crazy, didn't he?
Yeah, not a vibe. But,
yeah.
So we're avoiding Andy Warhol.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not keen on Warhol, to be honest. And he was a bit of a exhibitionist, you know, a bit quite flamboyant, and I don't know.
Are most artists like that, though?
Yeah, he was up himself. I don't know. I mean, you probably would be interesting to meet as well, but I'd rather meet Van Gogh. So I reckon I'm going to avoid Andy Warhol.
I feel like Van Gogh would be fun, like, at a party.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I think he'd drink lots of absinthe, didn't he?
Yeah, he'd bring the absinthe to the party.
Yeah, he would, yeah.
That's an important contribution.
Yeah, I think he would drink us under the table. He would do shots of absinthe.
Under the table?
No, he would, like, drink us under the table, as in he'd, like, beat us, like, easily in a drinking competition.
Oh, right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. And I think Turner at a party would get so much attention. But he'd be quite shy, I think. He'd be like that mysterious guy in the corner that no one really...
He's probably the kind of husband you just leave at home and go hang out with your mates.
You reckon? I don't mind. As long as he stays at home.
He's too in his feelings with the romantic landscapes and stuff. He's like got too many feelings.
You think, yeah.
He's probably just like good husband material, but not majorly fun at a party.
Yeah, I'll just leave him at home. He can... You know, redecorate the house, I suppose.
Imagine painting the walls with Turner. Yeah, oh my god, can you imagine?
That'd be fantastic.
That would be amazing.
I wouldn't say no to that. That'd be an expensive house.
I still can't believe today we saw William Morris on the wall in Jesus College.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
That was amazing. Inside the chapel.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You know what? So going back to Turner, I completely forgot, but we have an original Turner up from there.
In your gallery?
Yes.
Why did you not show this to me yesterday?
Because it's not in the King's Parade Gallery. It's at the director's house. Of course, he doesn't trust us to keep it at the gallery. Because he doesn't come
so
in.
So he's got it hanging in his house?
Yeah, in his kitchen.
That's so...
Which is not good.
Wait, like, surely it gets damp.
Exactly. I wasn't too happy about it when I found out.
That's unacceptable.
He's weird. He's like an eccentric old dude with lots of money. The kind of guy you'd expect to own an art gallery like that.
But, like, I'd expect him to, like, treat the painting a bit better than
that. Yeah, I know. It's not good.
I would kill to have a Turner in my house. Anyway, do you think that young people, like, are aware enough of art and art history? Like, in terms of, like, I don't know if the education system maybe lets the side down on this one. But, like, if you spoke to, like, I don't know, 17, 18, 19-year-olds, or even, like, a lot of people our age, do you think that, like, you could have a proper conversation about art with them?
I don't know. It depends on the person, really. I mean, of course, we didn't do A-levels.
Yeah.
But we didn't know the EB. But we were, our art classes were very well, you know, we were well trained in, not only in, you know, practical side of art, but also art history and theory. We had, do you remember, we had one session a week that was
history.
Entirely art history.
Yeah.
And actually, we learnt a lot then. And I suppose that kind of gives you a bit of a kind of an upper hand. You know, it opens up kind of doors for you, and then kind of find out about this stuff yourself if you're passionate about it anyway.
Yeah, I guess if you're not interested in art, you couldn't really have a conversation with someone that's not interested.
But I definitely feel like, our art classes at school kind of helped me, kind of, I suppose, develop my art knowledge and art culture.
In architecture, is there, like,
Yeah.
Do you do arty history or?
Yeah, so in architecture you do like, I had architecture, history and theory modules. And you realise that actually there are lots of parallels between art and architecture. And so all the styles, you know, all the different styles you can trace a line and all the kind of, you know, cubism and like neoclassicism and so on, you have the same in architecture. Like the buildings develop and evolve the same way that art does, in most cases, which is quite interesting. So that kind of, yeah. So art history was also kind of mentioned and brought up quite a lot. And it does help to know. And I think there are lots of kind of qualities that you share between art and architecture.
And you do like quite a lot of paintings and you sell paintings and stuff.
I do actually, yeah. There's actually an original Turner in this room.
Haha, the Max Turner. Very cool.
Max Turner. Yeah, I've been like, I don't know, I paint for myself, I suppose, because I find it quite therapeutic.
Yeah.
Do you
suggest painting as a form of therapy to anyone that's going through like tough times? Would you say start painting?
I think so, yeah. I mean, maybe other people don't enjoy it, but I really enjoy it and it helps me kind of clear my head and relax. And actually, I started an art club last year in Jesus College, and I'd invite students and staff and fellows to join in and to kind of, I suppose, I provide, you know, providing a space and materials for them to kind of come and unwind and just be creative. And we had really good feedback. People would come after a really long week, you know, and kind of de-stress, I suppose. So it obviously works, you know, for some people. So I would recommend it, yeah.
Didn't you say that the dean went as well, like the really top tier people in the
college? The master came a few
not
times.
Not the dean, the master even, yeah.
Dean came, maybe not, I don't know if the dean came. But yeah, fellows would come, master would come, then also staff would come and students would come, so it's actually a really nice mix of you know, of people. It wasn't like just a student thing or just, you know, for fellows or whatever. I didn't want it to be kind of exclusive, of course. And even like, people could bring friends from other colleges or from outside the university. That was absolutely fine. And you know, we had a cup of tea and had some biscuits and spoke about art and, you know, drew and painted. It was lovely. Yeah.
Art's often viewed as quite like a niche thing to know things about, as in only people from like upper classes or like private education systems are aware of it. Do you think that art's becoming more accessible as like a form of knowledge and something that people are interested, or do you think that it is still kind of like quite limited to your class and upbringing?
I think in this day and age, you know, with digital art, I think it's become way more accessible, especially at the moment with kind of NFTs. I think that's,
they sell for like hundreds of thousands
stupid.
Now. It's mad.
It's horrible. I hate it. But it's kind of,
but it does make, I guess it does make it more accessible.
It does, yeah. And then, I don't know, like digital art. I mean, David Hockney has started doing digital art. How weird is that? I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest. But he's now doing sketches on his iPad or whatever.
He's jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, he loves it.
It's probably just trying to adapt to the digital age. He's probably seeing it as like a mode of survival.
Yeah, he does need to survive because he's, you know, he's
I know, but like, it
artist.
Makes him accessible to people that otherwise wouldn't know his art, probably.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
Because like, you can surf the internet and find stuff in a way that you can't really, like, not on the internet.
Yeah. I don't know, yeah, to us, I don't really know much about his work and why, and his motives behind.
What does NFT stand for again? I don't remember.
It's like non-fungible assets. No, sorry, non-fungible something.
Oh, yeah. They're just pieces of digital art, aren't they? I saw one that sold for like $500,000 the other week.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was. Oh, it was a meme, actually.
Yeah, memes sell for so much.
That's so weird that memes like sell as pieces of art.
And apparently it's actually so hard to get on the market now. So you need to be like a NFT seller, an NFT artist, you need to get approved by the online galleries as an artist who's relevant, I suppose, in the world. But when NFTs were first started, no one knew about them, so it was really easy to get in. They would approve loads of artists. But now that is massive, everyone's trying to get in, it's a lot harder to get, you know, to be approved and sell NFTs. So I reckon if I tried, I'd have no chance.
But then when you buy one for that much money, what do? You print it off? Like, I don't really understand
the
concept. Like, if I buy art, like, I want a physical, tangible piece in my, like, to hold it and hang it up on my wall. But if you buy it, you just print it off yourself? I don't really understand that.
I think it's all about ownership. People want to own. People like to be the only person in the world to own something. It's all, you know, it is all about ownership, I think. You know, it feels good when you buy a painting or when you buy a print, for example. The print is normally a limited run print, so you have like 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 10, depending on the print. But that 1 out of 10 is what gives it the value, most value, because people want to have their own share. So they know other people have a print, but they know that they're the only one to have that number out of 10. And that's what feels good. When you have art, you know, your collection, that's quite a nice feeling.
I guess, but like with digital images, even if you own like the original, let's say, meme, it's still spread all over the internet. Like it's not an exclusive thing. Like if a painter's only painted like 50 paintings and you have one of them, it's not really the same. I guess there can be pictures, like you have the digital pictures of like Monet's paintings on Google or whatever. But with a meme, like people can screenshot it, like everyone has it on their phone. Like it's not, even if you own the original thing, it's not really like
of course
an exclusive
thing. I suppose just knowing you have the, you can access the original code and that's yours, you know, and then no one else has it. Of course you can screenshot it or print it off and scan it or whatever, take a photo of it, and it, you know,
I guess when I think about art, I don't really think about like how many of that product are out there. For me, it would be more like, I like this painting, I want it displayed in my living room, as opposed to it being like, oh, this is really rare and that's why I want it. For me, it's more like, I like the look of it,
of course,
and it would add to the look of my room, rather than, I don't know, what do you, what do you think?
I agree, I'm the same. I only get out if I like it. But also, it's quite flex, isn't it, to say, oh, that's a Matisse in the corner, by the way. You know, that's a talking point. I mean, I love Matisse anyway, so I would have some of his work in my house if I could afford it, of course. But he, but I think it's, you know, it's a good talking point. And I suppose it's a way of showing off, you know, saying, I've got this piece of art that's really famous and you don't. And people are always wondering how you got it, where you got it from.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's passed down, you know.
But having, like I was saying, having a Matisse would be a massive flex, but having an original meme, it just doesn't have the same effect. Like, it's just not the same.
Not quite the same gravitas, is it?
No, not at all.
No. Maybe we should stop getting memes on my wall. Yeah, I can see a couple of blank spaces. We could get some memes out. Don't know which one I'd choose, though. What meme would you go for?
I think the one that I saw recently that sold for loads was that picture of that girl with the, you know, the burning building.
Oh, yeah.
And she's standing in the foreground and she's looking at the camera in like mischievous way.
Mm.
That picture I honestly find it so funny. Like the more I look at it, the more I love it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind having that hanging on my wall. It's a creepy picture, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
Her facial expression is priceless.
Yeah.
It's like a picture which I find entertaining.
Okay. Well, there you go. If you find it entertaining, then why not? Get it on your wall.
What meme would you have on your wall?
Don't know. I'm not really a meme guy. I don't really follow memes.
I thought everyone was a meme person these days.
I don't know. I see them pop up, you know, but I don't.
You're such a weird Gen Zer if you don't like. Is it Gen Zer? Is that a word? Anyway.
Gen Zer. That's quite cool.
Yeah.
I'm a Gen Zer.
Gen Zer. You're a weird Gen Zer for not liking memes.
You reckon?
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay. I forgive you.
I mean, I do find them funny. It's just that I'm not.
You're also a weird Gen Zer because you don't have Instagram.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. I'm refusing to get Instagram. Don't know why. I just don't.
But you're going to get a professional account.
I think so, maybe. Yeah. I've actually already got it, but I haven't got it. It's private for now, so I'm just trying to build it up.
I mean, I'm not going to defend Instagram to the moon and back because it's obviously it's very problematic in many ways. It can be so addictive as well.
Yeah.
But you can follow some good meme pages on Instagram.
Of course, there's always it's up to you really to filter out the bad stuff, you know. And I get that, but there's a lot of, I suppose, you know, a lot of bad stuff out there, especially for kids who are kind of, you know, young teenagers are growing up and they see things that might distort their vision of reality, and it can be quite toxic. Platform, I think.
No, definitely. I think on this podcast, a lot of people have said that.
Exactly. But I think that's the case for every social media platform.
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook and I don't really.
If I have kids, I'm not going to let them have a phone until they're like at least, I'll say maybe like 13, which is quite old. I mean, I was 11 when I got my first phone.
Really? I think I was older than that. I was like 14 or something.
But like, it wasn't the same as now. It wasn't a smartphone. It was like a brick.
Or like Nokia brick. They're so cool.
I think I had like a flip phone or like a Samsung.
Is it like one of those like Motorola?
It was like a silver Samsung that you like, you pushed the screen up and then you got the keyboard. Keyboard? The keyboard.
We are not hungover. I promise.
Keyboard, that's amazing. Anyway, yeah. So you couldn't really like access apps or the internet, so it was kind of different.
You remember you had to like send a text, it was like 10p.
Yeah. And you had to like properly count the characters.
Yeah.
It would be like you with a 2, the number.
Yeah. I used to like get through my allowance so quickly, my parents would be like, have you already spent £10?
Yeah, legit.
We're not topping you up. I'm like, please.
Okay. So what do you think is the best and worst thing about being a young person at this wild...
Best and worst thing?
Era that we're living through, yeah.
Gosh,
best and worst thing.
That's a deep question.
Yeah.
Worst thing about being in person. Start with the worst thing. I just like to, like, the economy, like, the housing market, for example, is just, like, it's becoming impossible, or very hard for young people to get in the housing market and to actually purchase property and, you know, kind of climb up the property ladder or whatever. But it's...
No, definitely.
It's actually been so, you know, become so hard and able to afford, like, you know, good quality housing.
Especially down south as well.
Especially in the south, and it's... And now people just don't buy property anymore because they can't afford it. So everyone rents, and the rent is, you know, rents are always going up. You know,
south of the UK.
And it's not kind of, in tangent with salaries. You know, we don't get, you know, sort of the inflation. We don't get high salaries.
No, definitely.
Well, not as quickly as the housing market is, I suppose, going up. So, and it's tough because, you know, I'm renting a house this year. And the house we're moving to next year is a lot more expensive, but we feel like we couldn't find anything the same price as this house. We just couldn't, and you see that jump straight away. We've noticed it in a year, which is crazy. So yeah, that kind of worries me, I suppose, and doesn't put us in a very good position, very easy position as young people, I suppose.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
So I don't know if it's the worst thing about being a young person, but it's one of the things that came to mind.
Yeah, I mean, we are. Supposedly the first generation to be not better off than our parents' generation.
Yeah.
Okay. And a large part of that is that we can't afford to have housing like they did.
Yeah.
Like, my parents bought a house in their 20s and then moved out and bought another one, which is now where we live. But for me, that's like...
Wow.
Not even in the
that's
realm
insane.
Of possibility. Yeah. Like, that could... I could not do that.
I can't even imagine buying a house in the next, like, 10 years.
Yeah, I would love to, but I can't. I also don't feel like I know exactly where I want to be based for that long term. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, mentally. I suppose you'd have to win the lottery and then it's sorted, aren't you? So
yeah, you need to buy several houses.
Get some NFTs and then you're sorted.
NFTs and some Matisse.
And some, yeah. Get some NFTs. I mean, make some NFTs, sell them for $500,000, buy some more NFTs and sell them for even more money, and then you have enough money to buy Matisse.
So maybe we should just start making memes and sell them for loads, and that's how we'll get rich.
Yeah. Get rich or die trying.
Or die trying. Isn't that what everyone does for most of their lives?
What does rich even mean? Like, it's all relative anyway.
And what about the best?
Best thing?
Yeah.
Nothing. It's horrible. No, I'm kidding. Best thing about being young? I don't know. You have the rest of your life ahead of you. You the world is your oyster, as people say. I don't know. Bit cliche, isn't it?
I really love that expression, weirdly. You know, that's actually my favourite expression.
The world's your oyster.
Yeah, I don't know why, I just love it.
Do you love oysters?
No, I actually hate oysters. So this is not very logical. They taste gross. They're slimy. No, I don't like them.
They're the best thing.
You like slurp it in and it goes like...
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's so fresh. And like.
No. Anyway.
A bit of lemon juice, or a bit of like shallot, vinegar. Oh, so good.
Ugh. Although it doesn't really make sense, because an oyster is really small, and if the world's your oyster, that's a pretty it's supposed to mean that you can like do or go to or achieve anything.
Yeah, it's weird expression. We have to look into that.
Yeah.
See where it comes from,
but I do like it.
Yeah. But no, also the best thing about being young, I don't know, we I feel like nowadays we young people have such a bigger voice. I feel like this it's kind of like this revolution of kind of ideas and concepts that being brought up in the last few years, and because we all feel so strongly about these things, I feel like things are changing in the world, thanks to young people voicing them so proactively.
Progressives.
So, exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Which is great, and we need to like take charge. You know, this is our planet. We need to, you know, run. You know, we need to run the planet. We.
In a sustainable and ethical
exactly.
way.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
You know, old people, they're going to die soon anyway. They don't. To be fair, why should they? You know, why should they care? Unless, yeah, of course, they've got children. They
Although,
children.
That is literally why I love David Attenborough. Because he is so old. He's not going to see the devastation that he talks about in the next, like, 4 to 5 decades.
Yeah.
He's never going to see that. But he's made his whole career out of warning people and raising awareness on these issues that he's never going to see. And I think that's really admirable and kind of like selfless in a way, because he spent so much time on something that's not actually going to affect him. Exactly. I mean, it's affecting the world already, but not in the kind of catastrophic way that will happen in the next few decades.
Yeah.
If we don't.
I think he says like, this can happen if you don't act now kind of thing.
Yeah.
Some things will happen for sure, but then some things that are really scary say, he says they can happen.
Yeah.
And they will happen if no action is taken, which is scary. I don't like those things, they scare me. But it's true.
Yeah, and the fact that he, like, bothers to spread that message.
Yeah.
It's just really good.
And it's like, you know, it's not up to other people to sort it out. It's like, you have to sort it out. It's, you know, it's on you. Because if everyone has that mentality, then who is going to sort it out? It can't be David Attenborough, because he's sadly won't be with us in, you know, 10 years' time. So maybe he will, don't know.
Oh, my God, I hope he will. I love him. Well, he's, like, 90 now, isn't he? Or is he in his 80s?
No, he's in his 90s. He's, like, 94, 95.
Oh, my
gosh.
He's such a trooper.
Yeah.
I feel like we spent a lot of time in this episode talking about David Attenborough, but it's fine. It's
I hope I get to meet him at some point. We're actually meant to, last summer, we were in touch with him for this kind of virtual May Ball thing we did in Cambridge to raise money for coronavirus causes. And we were in touch with him, and we tried to get him to kind of record a piece for us. And as like one of our special guests on the, you know, on the virtual May Ball. And sadly, so he agreed to it, but then his kind of producers or his team kind of turned it down because they would have had to, at the time, go into his house with recording equipment to help him out. And they don't want to kind of risk and bringing in the virus
COVID,
and killing him off. So in the end, he
Can you imagine if you're like carrying COVID asymptomatically and you accidentally kill David Attenborough?
Yeah.
That would be... You could never ever like...
I wouldn't forgive myself.
No, I would live a miserable life after that.
Yeah. It's horrible.
That would be so grim. That is one of the really rubbish things of being young at the moment, I think, in a pandemic. That whenever I'm like walking down the street, now that people are more vaccinated, it's not as bad. But like last year, if I went anywhere near an old person on the street, I would fully like detour. And it's so scary to always like worry that you could be carrying something that could kill an old person. It's really grim.
That's the way... Yeah, that's what they're saying, right? They said you should always behave yourself as if you had the virus.
Yeah.
To make sure you are socially distanced, you are wearing a mask, you're, you know.
Yeah.
It's
just like this sheer sense of fear and guilt if you are and you go near an old person.
Yeah.
Anyway, no one's killed David Attenborough so far, so we're good. We
touch
love
wood.
Him. Yep, touch wood.
We're good.
Yeah.
He's a trooper. He's going to be fine, I'm sure.
David,
if you're listening. If you're listening, David.
If you're listening.
Stay strong.
And
be safe.
I love you. And you can find me on this podcast, on my website, franthropology.com, and Franchi McClimmon on Instagram, although I don't think he has Instagram.
Little plug. Yeah, he does.
He got it briefly, but I think he's like deleted his
account. Oh, has he? Well, sorry, to be honest, I don't know. I don't have Instagram, so how would I know?
Yeah. I love him, but he's probably not listening to this sometimes. Anyway.
No, I don't know.
You never know.
You never know.
Maybe.
If you do listen, please reach out, David.
Yeah, please. Call me. Love you. Well, thank you so much, Max. This has been a very productive chat, and a lot of it's just been us, like, sending our love to David Attenborough. But
That's where it should be. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for thinking of me, I suppose. I don't know what I've done to deserve this, but it's been a pleasure. I was actually really nervous, but now I'm like, I'm super pumped. So,
good, I'm glad.
Yeah, and I hope I haven't, you know, said anything weird. Maybe I have, but it's cool.
You've been good. I'm feeling pumped too. I love
good.
Just talking to people, and this podcast is really fulfilling, so.
Yeah. Cue the outro music.
Thank you for tuning into 20s Questions. As always, you can find this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on my website, franthropology.com.